listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. If you're looking for a better pre-owned buying experience, Lakewood Chev has certified pre-owned vehicles that are fully inspected, warranted by General Motors, and have a 30-day exchange privilege. It's Lakewood Chev. Kerry, welcome back to the show. The playoffs are here. The fun, the excitement has begun. I want to talk about... let's start with the officiating last night, the Oilers and the Sharks game. People get upset. I thought the game was fine. I don't think officiating had anything to do with the outcome. The Oilers, four offensive zone penalties, definitely not the way you want things. I don't think it's a perfect game for the officials, just like the players wasn't perfect. Having watched it, what did you break down from the officials last night?
Well, I agree with you. I think the biggest factor in the score being as close as it was the terrific play of Cam Talbot stopping 44 shots, and Martin Jones only had 19 managed at his end. So, but as far as the officiating, there were just a couple that bothered me in the sense that every call in the playoffs, as we've seen, can have a factor that can be a factor in the game. So the Eric Greiba elbow on Logan Couture, that one bothered me. There wasn't a goal scored on it. Of course, anytime you have to defend on a penalty kill, your offense is not out there. You don't have Connor McDavid and the big guns out there typically. So it's 2 minutes of non-offensive time, but defending. That play was just a normal good hit that Logan Couture bent down. The facial injury that he sustained and had the protective device on, he threw his head back, and that certainly sold the call. But his head was not much higher than the dasher board, if any. So I didn't like that one. The one that really was a factor, as far as I'm concerned, was, and I would have wanted it managed differently, was in the third period when Patrick Maroon and Mark Edward Vlasic got tied up together inside the blue line. Maroon was down on the ice. He held onto the stick of Vlasic. Vlasic gave him a little shove. Referee was approaching that. The puck was nowhere in that vicinity. And referee Eric Furlot was approaching the two of them on the same side from the back door. And rather than instruct them verbally to get up and get moving, he decided to call a penalty. Now, that created a four-on-four situation. If you recall back in the 80s when the Oilers were coached by Glenn Sather, and he was a master, and they had all those future Hall of Famers, Gretz and company and Metz, and you name them on and on and on, they had a play towards the end of a game, if it was tied, that one of the defensemen would rough a guy in front of the net, they'd get into a punch-back scrum, and we typically would take one guy from each side. It would create a four-on-four situation. The league saw the power of the Edmonton Oilers power play at that point and that it was a ploy that they used to their advantage. So they changed the rule during a period of the game to make it coincidental in the sense that they weren't served. We stayed five-on-five, and that was the Edmonton Oilers rule of that era. It subsequently was changed to where we find it today, the four-on-four situation. And what happened last night at 4:51 of the third period when Maroon and Vlasic went off and it opened the ice, it led to the attack of Paul Martin from the blue line, jumping up to the play and doing a tap-in rebound. That extra ice can be an advantage one way or the other. Last night, the San Jose Sharks and Paul Martin got the advantage of that extra space on the ice with a four-on-four call that really didn't need to be called, in my judgment.
Kerry Fraser joins us, and that's one where people would say, okay, well, even out, and it did, of course, result in a four-on-four goal, which can be big. And the Oilers, what was about that four-on-four play was there is miscommunication. They had possession of the puck and just turned it over, and then it led to them cycling down low and ultimately, hurdle with a strong play out of the corner, led to Martin getting the wide-open net. Now, when you look at the... some people say, managing the game, and I know you and I have disagreed on that as far as disagree with fans who think that refs should or shouldn't manage a game. But going into last night with all that emotion, Karen, you go back to your playoffs when the building's that much louder. Like I saw a few times where, you know, there were some big hits that sometimes get called in the regular season. And last night, and I didn't think they were penalties, they're letting them go. Do referees just naturally recognize that there's going to be more ferocious contact in the playoffs and that's just normal and it should be okay?
Well, they certainly should, and I hope that they would. And there were some really big hits last night. You want the crowd to be in the game. I mean, the game is for the fans as much as it is for the players. So if you can get the game moving, and here's the thing too, Jason. Rather than have a stoppage, I wanted to keep the puck moving as much as I possibly could. There was a play last night when Cam Talbot stopped the puck, caught the puck. He hung on to it. The referee didn't blow the whistle. He forced him to play the puck. There was no danger. There was no San Jose Shark players in the neighborhood. And it was a wise decision to keep the puck moving. We got some more sustained action. And whenever you have sustained action, the players give their hits, and they generally tend to take the hits without retaliation. So you saw some real good contact early, the emotion in the building. The players fed off it. Edmonton jumped out to the lead. It was all really good playoff hockey and entertainment. Where it broke down, and it showed to me as I was tweeting out last night, the inexperience of the Edmonton Oilers sort of showed up. San Jose played a terrific road game. They've been in that situation countless times in the last 10 years that the Edmonton Oilers haven't. And, of course, there's a lot of young players on the Oilers team right now. They're going to have to get accustomed and acclimated to this style of playoff hockey. The turnovers were horrific. They just seemed to be a step behind. And the pressure that was exerted by the San Jose Sharks really turned the tide in that game. Cam Talbot was terrific. And your goalie has to be typically your best player in the playoffs. We saw that in every game last night in the first round. If you look at Henrik Lundqvist, shut out the Habs. He's going against Carey Price, and he bested Price. Let's go back to the Grant Fuhr, Andy Moog tandem. Two number one goalies. We saw that last night with the Pittsburgh Penguins when Marc-Andre Fleury was called in for Matt Murray after the warm-up. He did a terrific job, and you would have thought that he would have been a little tentative, a little gun-shy, nervous. We've seen him in past playoff years. He's been up and he's been down, but he really stood the test last night. And if you went to St. Louis and watched any of that, Jake Allen stopped 52 shots in a 2-1 overtime win, and Devnik Dubnik had 26 shots. So 52-26, and you've got Jake Allen winning for the St. Louis Blues in a 2-1 overtime win to grab game one. Tuukka Rask, same thing. Second period in Ottawa. 12-0 were the shots. The Bruins didn't manage a shot. Tuukka Rask held them in there, and then, of course, they win 2-1 over the Ottawa Senators to grab home ice advantage. So your goalie has to be your best player. Cam Talbot certainly stood the test last night. You can't fault him on anything, but his teammates in front of him really have to pull up their socks and get used to this playoff hockey quickly.
Carey Fraser joins us, longtime NHL official. Carey, have you noticed, when a goalie gets hot, and we always say, hey, get traffic in front of the goalie, how much more aware do officials have to be of potential contact on goalies later in a series? Did you know that, or did you notice that as a trend when you were officiating playoff games over the years?
Oh, big time, Jason. And I think even in pregame prep, we would go over the potential for players that would go hard to the crease. I mean, Holmquist is a guy. Tutu was a guy. You had in Detroit a couple of guys that stood right on the crease. Big Todd Bertuzzi was always in the vicinity. The Swede, forgetting his name, but man, I'll tell you, he was a guy that was always, always in the goalie's face and making contact if you weren't looking. Ryan Smith was a guy for Edmonton that would look to see if the referee was dialed in on the crease. If he wasn't, he would skate around and tap the goalie's knob of his stick and just throw him off as the shot was coming. He fooled me once or twice on that kind of play. So you really had to be aware of players that have a tendency to go to the net and do certain things to throw off the goalkeeper. That being said, everybody is a potential, and when the puck is in the vicinity, you really have to be dialed in when you're down on that goal line.
Interesting, you know, and hey, smart veteran play. They look if the guy's turning his head away, you give him a tap. You can't call everything. Now, though, with the two-man system, does the official in the center ice area, is he watching for more things on the opposite side of the ice in the defensive zone? Because let's say the official's in the left corner, Carey. Is the guy who's across the ice, he's on the right side. Is he focused then basically on the right side, or is he still focused on the puck? What's the responsibility of the neutral zone official when the puck's in the defensive zone?
Well, the play transition. So when the puck is down low, below the hash marks, top of the circle, that referee down on the goal line is responsible for the action on the puck. So he's looking for a foul in and around the vicinity of the puck. At that point, the neutral zone referee is looking at the away from the puck play. He's looking for a hook, a hold, an interference, but he has a slower look at things. Being a long distance look, things appear slower, so he has a more wide vision. If the puck moves over to that side of the ice that the neutral zone player is on, right down even into the corner, he typically would have a better look down the wall, and both officials can certainly raise their arms, as we've seen many times in a game. But getting that best look, drawing the bead down the wall when you're in the neutral zone, you step up close to the blue line when the puck's deep. Now, when it transitions and the puck is cycling, if it comes above towards the hash marks and starts to move to the top of the circle, that's a transition of responsibility. The neutral zone official will then take the play on the puck, the action around the puck, once it comes up top circle and towards the blue line, and your goal line referee will take the non-puck action. He'll be looking in front of the net. If there's a hook, a hold, a knockdown, a cross-check on a non-puck carrier, that's his primary responsibility. But we're talking primary versus each of them have the ability, if they see an infraction and they truly believe it is an infraction, no guesswork, but then they raise their arm.
Because I know the one frustration I sense from players, fans, media people is when there's a play in the defensive zone and the referee 5 feet away doesn't call it, and then the guy at center ice raises his hand and calls the penalty. If you were the ref closer, is that a faux pas amongst the two officials? Is that almost showing the guy, say, hey, man, it's right in front of you, you didn't call it? How does that work?
Used to drive me crazy, I'll tell you. With younger officials that we came into the two-referee system, it got to the point, and there was some competition that was created with the younger guys. They felt they had to get involved. If sometimes, you know, it just was the luck of the draw. There were penalties and infractions that occurred in and around your vicinity and your responsibility, and you raised your arm. That didn't bother me. If they all happened in the younger official's end, good for him. As long as he got them, we're working together, and that's the objective, is to get it right. But it used to drive me nuts when I would be standing 5 to 10 feet from a play in the corner, and I thought my judgment was pretty darn good, and I had, you know, a lot of respect from the players, and I would even go to the point of shaking my head that it wasn't an infraction, and then from 100 and some feet away, we'd hear a whistle, and the penalty would be called. It got to the point in pregame meetings that I would say to the younger official, and they're all younger than me, or less experienced, listen, I really liked your judgment. Your judgment is good. And when the puck is in and around your vicinity, and it's your responsibility, and I'm standing a long way back, I'm going to give you that call, and I'm going to trust your judgment. Unless, of course, it is something that I just think you missed, and it has to be called. And on the other end, I would like the same sort of courtesy. If I'm looking at it, and it's close, and I don't raise my arm, that's mine to take, unless you feel that it is absolutely one that I missed, and you have to intervene. That was sort of my pregame meeting with guys. Because it really doesn't work well when you have a guy from 100-plus feet away imposing himself on a play when you have, down low, the better look.
And lastly, Kerry, is the officials, and they don't work just one series. The guys who worked last night are now going to move on and do another series and, you know, maybe be back later on. But obviously outside advanced scout work, what's the biggest challenge going from series to series for officials, if there is one?
Well, I don't really think there is one. I think your preparation and your rest, your social habits, everything is about the game. You have to do everything possible to prepare yourself for the next one. Now, they'll have their assignments through the first five games. They all know where they're going to go and what series they're going to be in. So they're going to keep an eye on the next series that they're moving into, just in sort of the rearview mirror. They get the first game over with, then they'll start to think about the next one. You look at what happened. You look at the box scores. If you get a chance and you have the night off, you're going to be watching what goes on in that next series on television, just to give yourself sort of a leg up on what to expect. Every game is different. You drop the puck and anything can happen. You have to be ready for it. The series supervisor stays with the series. So he's going to be responsible for updating each of the new officials that come into the game. They'll have their pregame meeting at noon, and he'll advise them as to things that went good and not so good in the previous games.
Now, when you mean good or not so good, are you talking from an officiating standpoint or from the game itself standpoint?
Well, in both sense, but primarily from the officiating end. There may be some ragged play. There may be some frustration with certain players. There may be a buildup from one game to the next, and the referees may be asked to listen. Keep an eye on these two guys. It ended ragged. There was some confrontations at the end. There was some hostilities. You know yourself, Jason, that the series builds in intensity. As they go on to games 5, 6, and 7, 7's not really a hard game to work, but in the middle of the a series, a tough series, it can really grind out. And you can have things that crop up that it isn't the series on the line, but it could be showmanship, gamesmanship, trying to throw somebody off. I would certainly expect a more physical game in Game 2 in the Oilers series with San Jose. They've got to come out. They've got to win one at home here. They got to split this. And so the pressure is on, but they've got to be physical like they were right off the bat, and the crowd has to stay in it. They let the crowd out of the game with their turnovers and their lack of physicality as that game went into the midway second period and third.
Kerry, as always, man, we appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you next Thursday. We'll have a lot of games to decipher, and I appreciate the emails we go back and forth on, hey, I saw this play, hey, I saw that play. So I look forward to it next Thursday. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jason. I look forward to it as well.
You betcha.